House Committee on Energy and the Environment, Monday, February 26, 2007, 1 p.m. in Hearing Room C. Chair, Representative Jackie Dingfelder.
The House Energy and Environment Committee for February 26. Got some noises going on back there. Just a reminder, though, if you do have a cell phone or a BlackBerry or a computer that's making noises, please shut it down. Actually, our audio will pick up buzzing.
No, no answer at her office.
Okay. Well, we're gonna move forward, and I'm gonna open up a work session for introduction of committee bills. And I will take a motion. Well, you have before you, members, LC-3402, which authorizes Department of Human Services to grant variances from standards requiring use of specified water treatment technique in certain cases, and LC-2567, which my recommendation is that we would recommend to the Speaker's office that this be moved over to the Ag and Natural Resources Committee, which Representative McPherson and I also serve on, but since their committee doesn't meet till tomorrow, it's too late for the deadline for introducing committee bills. So, and again, colleagues, by introducing these committee bills, it does not mean that there is support for the content of these bills. It's more to introduce them and for the deadline and have a discussion. So with that, I would take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move the introduction of LC-2567 and LC-3402, if I can do them together.
Together, okay.
As committee bills.
Representative Cannon moves LC-3402 and LC-2567 be introduced as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Okay. Seeing none, the motion is passed. And with that, I will close the work session on introduction of committee bills. And now we will open up the work session on House Bill 2105. This is relating to removal fill permit fees. Kat, do you want to just remind us about that?
Yeah.
Then I will ask the department if they could come up, because I think we have some amendments you might want to tell us about.
So, House Bill 2105 increases the base fee and volume fee for permits to remove material from beds or banks of waters of the state or to fill waters of the state. You also have in front of you an amendment to the bill, HB 2105-2, and what that one does is it ties the annual incremental fee in the bill to increases in the consumer price index rounded to the nearest dollar, and it allows the director of the Department of State Lands to issue that increase annually by order. It also creates a general permit category for removal fill activities that are substantially similar and ongoing.
Okay, committee members, you should have the dash two amendments in front of you, and I'm going to ask Luis Soliday, who's the director of the Department of State Lands, to walk us through the amendments.
Madam Chair, I think your committee administrator covered them fairly well, but let me spend a little bit of time on the general permit concept, since we did not talk about that during the public hearing. We have been looking at ways to streamline our removal fill permitting process, and we have a number of efforts underway. And in looking at the tools that we have in our toolbox, we looked at this new tool that is a general permit as something that would be helpful, particularly for activities that are repetitive in nature, same kind of activity, but being done either on a statewide basis or within a watershed or within a region. And this would allow us, through a single permit, to permit those similar kinds of activities that are done over and over again with a standardized set of conditions that would need to be met. And it would just give us another tool in the toolbox as we're trying to look at ways that we can streamline this process. And I can sort of give you a couple of examples of places where this might be very helpful. The Farmers Irrigation Alliance has patented a prototype fish screen that they're using on irrigation diversions, and I think they have something like 30 projects lined up to do this summer. Well, under our process, they'd have to come in with 30 applications because they're all over the state. If we had a general permit tool in our toolbox, they could come in with a single application to cover these new fish screens that would go on irrigation diversions. We could issue a single permit with a standardized set of conditions that they would need to meet as they're doing those projects around the state. We also have lots of watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts who are doing restoration projects, placement of large wood, and a lot of times those are similar types of activities. They're being done on lots of different tributaries, lots of different streams in a particular geographic area. It's another area where we could use a general permit to issue an authorization to do that kind of work. It would give us a tool that's parallel to what the Corps already has in their toolbox in terms of nationwide permits and general permits that they use for activities that are repetitive in nature, similar in nature, have similar kinds of anticipated environmental outcomes. So it's just a new tool that we would like to put in our toolbox. You'll notice that we've got some language starting on page 2 at the in section 9. This sort of talks about some general criteria that we would use in applying these general permits, and we would expect that we would initiate rulemaking to go into some more elaboration about how those general permits would work at the end of the session. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any other questions. The other changes that are in here are just renumbering and relettering based on the changes that we're proposing in the original bill.
Okay. Are there any questions for Department of State Lands on this? Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me.
Representative Burley is recovering from the crud.
I understand. I'm halfway through it, too. First of all, Director, I really appreciate you coming back with this amendment, changing the automatic 3% to a CPI adjusted. I think that's very responsible. But my question is, if I'm reading this correctly, there's still no sunset, for lack of a better term. In other words, there's no, at the end of 5 years, you would come back to reauthorize the program and the fee structure as is. Is that correct? There's no sunset?
And Madam Chair and Representative Burley, that is correct. Now, just so you know, we do a biennial report to the legislature on removal fill activities, and it would be our intent to include as a part of that reporting where we are with the fees in terms of covering the cost of the program, what those increases have been as a result of the adjustments based on the CPI, and there would be an opportunity during any legislative session for legislation to be introduced to change how we're raising those fees.
I guess yes, ma'am. Perhaps more of a comment. I'm just not aware of another fee. I certainly don't profess to know all of them, but we share one thing here about these fees, and that is we don't have a consistent policy across the state government with these fees. And I guess I'm still a little concerned that we don't have a very clearly defined sunset, at which point we must come back and readdress that. So this gets us a long ways going from 3% to a CPI, which I think is commendable. I'm uncomfortable not having a sunset.
Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I'm going to sort of bracket the discussion here from a different direction that Representative Burley just offered up. My concern is that the fees still don't cover the entire cost of the program. And otherwise, and if they don't, then that is, in effect, subsidy that comes out of, as I understand it, the Common School Fund.
Correct.
In effect, all Oregon school kids are bearing whatever cost is not being borne by the people seeking a permit. And so, while I will support the bill, I'm concerned on the other side that we aren't having a fully fee-recovered process of regulation on schedule.
Thank you for the comment. Director Soliday, what would this proposed increase, what percentage of costs are covered? I know that we talked about initially the removal fill permit program was set up to be a 65-35 split, with 65% covered by the Common School Fund and 35% covered by fees. So what does this bill, with the proposed increase, get us up to?
Madam Chair, based on our estimates, this would get us up in the 20 to 25% range. And you'll remember that last year our fees covered just under 10% of the total cost of the program.
And just to follow up to that, with this CPI, does that mean that we would maintain the 20 to 25% or does it get us any closer to the 35%, which was the original, was that the legislative intent?
Madam Chair, the 65-35% intent was a legislative intent, and that was, again, based on the fact that the Common School Fund is the owner of submerged and submersible lands and navigable waterways, tidally influenced waterways, and so it benefited from the removal fill program. And that was identified as being about 35% of the cost of the program. And so that was the original justification for 65% of the program being paid for out of fees and the other 35% from the Common School Fund. The CPI, it depends on what the salary and wage benefit package is for state employees, whether the CPI will cover the increasing costs. Our hope is that it will, but it may not.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Okay. Motion. Madam Chair, I move the LC-2 amendments to House Bill 2105.
Representative Cannon moves the -2 amendments to House Bill 2105. Is there any discussion? Representative Burley.
Thank you. I'm going to vote no on this because of my concern about the sunset, but I also want to point out for the record I absolutely agree about the concern with using the Common School Fund lands because I think there's a higher priority for the use of those lands. But nevertheless, I'll be no vote on this.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. Those of the opinion that the amendment should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair
Dean. Aye. Motion carries and the -2 amendments have been adopted.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cannon.
I move House Bill 2105 as amended by the -2 amendments to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and the bill be referred to the Ways and Means Committee by prior reference.
Okay, thank you, Representative Cannon. So there's a motion that House Bill 2105 as amended with the -2 amendments be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Dingfeld?
Aye. So the motion, having received the required majority, is declared passed. And we will close the work session on House Bill 2105. I will ask you to stay up there because I am now going to open up a work session on House Bill 2106. And Kat, if you can tell us about that, that's the wetland delineation fee, and also we have some amendments for that as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. House Bill 2106 establishes the fee for review of wetland delineation reports submitted to the Department of State Lands and declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. There's an amendment before you that's numbered 2106-3. And that also, as the committee requested, ties the annual incremental fee increase to the consumer price index, rounded to the nearest dollar, and it allows the DSL director to issue an order accomplishing the fee. It also establishes a 120-day timeline for review of wetland delineation reports.
Thank you, Kat. And Director Soliday, do you want to add anything to that?
Madam Chair, the only other issue that I'd raise is in response to concerns that were raised at the first hearing. We've also proposed that the fee for a resubmitted delineation be $100 instead of $350 because we will have already done an initial review of that delineation and we'll be looking at it for the second time.
Okay, and committee members, that's your amendment in the -3, that's line 6. And it says in line 17, delete 350 and insert 100. Okay. Any questions for the director? Representative Burley?
Just a couple of comments real quickly. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Louise, again, for being responsive to this, because not only did you add or change 350 to 100 for the resubmission, but also in lines 2 through 4 of this amendment, you did put in a 120-day turnaround time period, which I very much appreciate. But again, this doesn't have a sunset in it, and I have to be consistent in my voting, so I'm going to also vote no on this. But I do appreciate your willingness to address those concerns and incorporate them in here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions or comments for the panel? Okay, so...
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2106.
Representative Cannon moves the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2106. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, those of the opinion that the Dash 3 amendments should be adopted, vote aye. Those opposed, vote no. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair
Dinkfeld? Aye. Motion carries, and the Dash 3 amendments have been adopted.
Madam Chair?
Representative Cannon?
I move House Bill 2106 as amended by the Dash 3 amendments to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Ways and Means Committee by prior reference.
So Representative Cannon has moved House Bill 2106 with the Dash 3 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the bill to be referred to Ways and Means Committee by prior reference. Any discussion? Okay, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative
McPherson? Aye.
Chair Dinkfeld?
Aye. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared passed. And I will now close the work session on House Bill 2106. Thank you, colleagues. And with that, we will now open up a public hearing on House Bill 2172 relating to diesel engines. And Kat, if you want to give us an overview of the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. House Bill 2172 directs the Environmental Quality Commission to establish a goal to reduce diesel emissions. It creates the Clean Diesel Engine Fund to provide grants and loans to repower and retrofit diesel engines. It creates income tax credit for certain costs of repowering and retrofitting diesel engines in service. It extends existing tax credits for purchasing new diesel engines meeting clean diesel emission standards to permit purchase of new diesel engines before 2012 to qualify for credit.
Thank you, Kat. And I just want to clarify for those folks in the audience or committee members who happen to not be here on Friday, we did pass House Bill 2101 down to the Ways and Means Committee. So although it was posted, just in case we didn't do that on Friday, that's already been moved. So we're done with the work session part of our agenda. I would like to start by calling up, I guess we're going to have DEQ come up. Is that right?
Yeah.
Andy Ginsberg. And Dave Vantoff, do you want to come up as well? And colleagues, today is Andy Ginsberg's birthday, and I thought it was very nice that he's sharing his birthday with us today here in front of the legislature. So we'll try not to ask you too many tough questions on your birthday. Thank you, gentlemen, and for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Dave Antoff from the governor's office, and also for the record, my birthday was Saturday night.
Now you guys are both in for it. So
I'm going to be very brief, Madam Chair, and then Andy Ginsberg from DEQ is going to walk through the bill in more detail. But I just wanted to share with the committee some background in terms of the governor's office perspective. This is one of the governor's top environmental priority bills this session, and it builds on work that he's been doing for several years around the clean diesel arena. One of the things that he did several years ago was create an Oregon Solutions project around trying to develop an innovative, stakeholder-driven and supported program to do anti-idling programs with the transportation sector, the trucking sector, and that led to a electrification program in several of the truck stops along the I-5 corridor, which has kind of been established as one of the models for the West Coast region and I think the nation in terms of trying to reduce the amount of diesel emissions that are occurring through transportation while also saving money for the transportation sector. So it was a great win-win opportunity, and that process is coming to fruition with several several of the truck stops getting their electrification equipment put in this year. If you drive along I-5 around Aurora, you can see an example of the technology that's used for these trucks to be able to hook in and turn off their engines while still getting electricity to meet their needs when they're relaxing in the truck stop. So it's a great program. And this bill we're very excited about because it will help kind of move clean diesel forward in the state even further by creating a grant program and also tax credits for the retrofitting of older engines that are that burn the dirtiest in the state, and create opportunities for the private sector and for our public schools to retrofit these engines and create just cleaner air, cleaner environment for our communities. While also reducing our greenhouse gas emissions in addition to the air particulates. So there's a lot of benefits that the bill will provide. A second program that I'll just make a quick note of, because Sharon Banks is here, I think will testify in much more detail about it, but the governor's been strongly supportive of a program to accelerate the use of auxiliary power units in trucks, which can, again, provide the opportunity for hooking into getting electric power without having to idle the engines for these trucks. So those two programs, along with this bill, will take great strides forward in terms of our clean diesel efforts in the state, and we hope that you'll be supportive of the bill.
Great. Thank you. The other birthday boy.
Madam Chair, Representative, members of the committee.
Hold on a minute. Dave, can you stay for questions, or do you have to run out?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I've got a commitment I've got to get to in about 5 minutes. I could take questions.
Why don't we see before you leave if there's any questions specifically for the governor's office?
Happy birthday.
Okay. Happy birthday, David.
Thank you.
That's your birthday present. It's only this one time.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andy Ginsberg, and also for the record, I'm only 49 years old. I'm here to provide you with a brief outline of House Bill 2172 and to urge your support for this important element of the Oregon Clean Air Initiative. This bill will be very important in reducing the public health and environmental impacts from diesel exhaust, and as David said, it's a priority for the governor's office. Diesel engines are an important part of the economy. They're valued because they're very powerful, they're durable, they're economical, and they're reliable. And they carry something like 94% of the nation's freight, so they're very critical to our economy. However, diesel exhaust creates very significant public health and environmental impacts, health impacts in the form of asthma, cardiovascular disease, and cancer, and environmental impacts in the form of haze and global warming, contributing to global warming. And in Oregon, diesel exhaust ranks as one of our top air toxics. 25 of the 36 counties in Oregon are over health benchmarks for exposure to diesel exhaust, and on average, an Oregonian has a risk 13 times over the public health benchmark set by the Environmental Quality Commission. Fortunately, though, we have great solutions for this that can maintain all the benefits of diesel engines while reducing their emissions. And in fact, new technology is now available so that new diesel trucks and retrofit existing trucks can be as clean as compressed natural gas engines, which have long been considered to be the benchmark for a clean engine. EPA has adopted tight new national standards for new trucks. They begin this year in 2007, so all new trucks coming off the assembly line will be super clean. And in 2010, tight federal standards will apply to other types of diesel engines, those that are not used on the highway, for example, construction equipment and agricultural equipment. That type of equipment will be super clean starting in 2010. But because diesel engines are so durable, which is one of their benefits, we won't see the benefit of the full benefit of the federal program for at least 30 years, maybe longer, as the old existing trucks wear out and are replaced by these new trucks. So the purpose of House and engines. So the purpose of House Bill 2172 is to speed up the benefit of the federal program and to bring the public health benefits to Oregon sooner by creating incentives to reduce diesel emissions from existing engines. Just briefly, I'll run through the sections of the bill, and attached to my testimony, I think on the third page, you'll see a section-by-section summary. Mm-hmm. Section 2, as your committee administrator mentioned, sets a goal to meet the health benchmark for diesel exhaust exposure set by the Environmental Quality Commission in 10 years. So this is a problem that's taken a long time to generate. We're not going to fix it in one biennium, but over five biennia, our goal is to reach the public health benchmarks. Sections 3 and 4 specifically focus on schools. Children and drivers are exposed to high levels of diesel exhaust in school buses, both inside and outside of the bus. And children are particularly susceptible because they have high respiratory rates. There is a fair amount of federal money available to retrofit and replace school buses through the Clean School Bus USA program. And Oregon has actually been successful in getting some of these grants in Southern Oregon and the Willamette Valley and in the Portland area. But these grants are competitive, and often the limiting factor in getting the grants to Oregon is the ability to provide local match. So what this bill does is to help schools compete, Oregon schools compete for the federal money by allowing them to use any expenditures that they make from the state school fund on diesel bus retrofits or purchasing buses to be used as match for federal grants. Sections 7 through 11 create the Clean Diesel Fund, and this fund would be used to provide grants for retrofitting, repowering, scrapping, and reducing idling from existing high-emitting diesel engines. The grants are needed because there is no requirement to retrofit these engines, and there's no natural market incentive to reduce the emissions. Although there are many engine operators that would like to, it's very difficult for them to do so and remain competitive without some grant assistance. The fund would include any general fund that's appropriated by the legislature, and the governor has included $3 million in his requested budget for the fund. And it would also include federal and other grants, and there is a fair amount of federal competitive federal grant money available under the Diesel Emission Reductions Act. And again, if we can create a program like this with the ability to bring match, we'll be more successful in competing for those federal grants. The bill would require the Environmental Quality Commission to establish guidelines for issuing the grants and loans under the clean diesel projects. For example, providing it's priority for grants that are going to help areas that have the highest emissions or areas with sensitive populations like children and the elderly, and also for applicants who provide some match to stretch the funds even further. Priority would also be given for engines that are used mostly in Oregon. We would have a simplified application process for small businesses, for example, a self-employed driver. And DEQ could either issue grants directly or, more efficiently, we could set up an arrangement with certified third-party equipment installers to issue the grants. Sections 12 through 16 would create a tax credit for retrofitting existing engines as a companion to the grant and loan program. This would create an incentive for engine owners to invest their own money in reducing diesel emissions, and it would help businesses, again, compete for federal grants by allowing them to provide more match. The tax credit would cover 50% of qualifying emission reduction costs for retrofits and repowers, and it would also include a pass-through feature which would allow local governments and transit agencies that operate diesel engines to benefit from the tax credit, and this program is modeled after a similar and very successful program in the business energy tax credit. Section 17 through 22 would extend the sunset date for the new engine tax credit. This was adopted by the legislature in 2003 to encourage truck drivers to purchase new trucks, but it sunsets at the end of this biennium, and because the new trucks beginning in 2007 are the cleanest ever, we would like to continue the incentive through 2011. And the reason it's needed is that just like you or I would hesitate to buy the first model year of a new car that comes out with totally new technology, we're also expecting truck drivers to have some hesitance to purchase the first couple of model years with the new technology. So this tax credit would help them overcome that hurdle and introduce this technology more quickly. So in summary, the bill provides a package of grants, loans, and tax credits, which is essential to reducing diesel emissions from existing engines. Studies indicate that there's at least a 10-to-1 return in public health and environmental benefits for every dollar that we spend on diesel emission reduction equipment. However, because most of this benefit does not go directly to the truck drivers or the engine owners, there's really no natural market incentive for them to make the investment. House Bill 2172 would significantly reduce the public health and environmental impacts from diesel exhaust, along with the associated health and health care costs. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Andy. Any questions? Representative Cannon.
I do have a question. Section 11, Andy, thank you for your testimony. Section 11 limits the initial use of these funds to diesel engines that are used in Oregon for at least 75% of the total number of miles, or at least it prioritizes those. I think it says 75% of the funds have to be used on those. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little more about the where diesel engines are and what sort of segment of the market this restriction still captures?
Chair Dinkfellow, Representative Cannon. The over-road trucks that are in interstate commerce typically are operating up and down I-5, and you'll hear more from some of the engine operators later today. These trucks may operate part of the time in Oregon. They'll be more of the time in California and some of the time in Washington as well. And so the idea is, in the early years of the program, we'd like to focus on engines that are concentrated more in Oregon. Those would be include some of the long-haul trucks, but also would focus more on local delivery trucks and then other types of engines, construction equipment, engines that are used at port authorities, engines that are used in construction that remain mainly in Oregon, so that at least in the early years, most of the benefit will happen here in Oregon.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up, first.
And I appreciate that concern. I think it's the right strategy to use. I'm just trying to get a sense of what amount of the solution do we have here? Is this, are we sort of talking about 10% and the other 90% are on those long-haul truckers that spend more than 25% of their time outside the state?
Chair Dingfellow, Representative Cannon, actually most of the emissions from diesel engines come from the non-road sector, so almost all... And so the idea is, in the early years of the program, we'd like to focus on engines that are concentrated more in Oregon. Those would be include some of the long-haul trucks, but also would focus more on local delivery trucks and then other types of engines, construction equipment, engines that are used at port authorities, engines that are used in construction that remain mainly in Oregon, so that at least in the early years, most of the benefit will happen here in Oregon.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up, first.
I appreciate that concern. I think it's the right strategy to use. I'm just trying to get a sense of what amount of the solution do we have here? Is this, are we sort of talking about 10% and the other 90% are on those long-haul truckers that spend more than 25% of their time outside the state?
Chair Dingfellow, Representative Cannon, actually most of the emissions from diesel engines come from the non-road sector, so almost all, a large part of the benefit would be from those engines that don't even operate on the highway. And then within the on-road sector, many of them are operating in Oregon, so we won't have any trouble meeting the goals that are in the bill, if that's what your question is.
Okay. I think that's helpful. Thank you.
I think Representative Cannon had a question, and then Representative Smith. Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you kind of got to my question. I mean, the whole package here applies to both highway and off-highway vehicles. And I think that the 75% limit really captures, as you said, a lot of the off-highway use. The other thing I just wanted to make sure I was clear in my, based on my reading of this, there's no hard mandate in here date that these conversions have to be made. What we're doing is setting some goals, creating some good incentives here to move towards those goals and keep track of our progress. Is that accurate?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Burley, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With the new biodiesel legislation we passed, what effect is that going to have on the social standards that we're talking about?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Smith, this bill is totally compatible with the biofuels legislation, but it's needed in addition to the biofuels legislation. Biofuels are primarily important because they'll reduce CO2 emissions or emissions that contribute to global warming, but biofuels are also compatible with the technology that's used in the clean diesel trucks and clean diesel engines. So they're completely compatible, but they're complementary.
Follow-up? Thank you. I appreciate your thought on global warming. How many folks are we going to be able to serve with this initial seed money?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Smith, our goal is to get to in five biennia to get to a one in a million risk level. That is, no more than one excess cancer per million people. And so our intent is to come back and ask for the next four biennia for additional funding for this bill. This initial step will take us part of the way there, but it will require a long ongoing effort to get all the way there.
Just follow up. I don't have the bill right in front of me, but $3 million approximately. How big of a step, or how little of a step is that taking us? $3 million doesn't seem like a drop in the bucket. It seems like a token effort to me.
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Smith, at the $3 million level, we estimate that approximately 323 engines could be scrapped, 193 engines could be retrofit, and that would reduce 20 tons per year of diesel emissions. That is a small part of the total package, but we need to add to that the truck stop electrification program that David Vanhoff mentioned recently, the truck efficiency improvements that Sharon Banks will talk about from Cascade Sierra Solutions, also existing projects with federal grants that we've been able to get for transit and garbage haulers, as well as programs we're working on with locomotives to reduce locomotive idling. So altogether, it adds up to a pretty significant reduction in diesel emissions. So this bill won't by itself solve the problem, but it helps us plug part of the gap that's left when you consider all the other efforts underway.
Just one last follow-up.
Follow-up.
These issues are new to me, so thank you for indulging my questions. What's 20 tons of, what did you call it? Was it CO2 you said?
Diesel particulate.
Tell me what that means.
Well,
what's that equate out to?
The total amount that we need to reduce per biennium or per year is about 140, a little over 140 tons of emissions per year need to be reduced to get to our goal. So 20 is a piece of that goal.
Thank you.
And Representative Smith, I mean, this was a chart that you had shared with me, and I think it would be useful for all the committee members because, and I'll pass it down so we can look at it, but I think it's visually, and I don't know if you have copies for all the committee. I think if you can hand that out, I think it's easier to visualize with a bar chart than just try to, you know.
Can I ask one more question?
One more, and then I have Representative Burley, and then we have a full lineup of people that would like to testify today, so I want to make sure that we get them on record.
How are we going to let small business owners know about this new program that's available to them?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Smith, through a number of channels, you'll hear from some of the others that will testify today. This bill has broad support from many of the associations that work with small truckers, and so our programs will reach out through them. We'll also have certified installers that do that actually do the equipment installation that will do outreach. We will, at DEQ, we will outreach the small business through all our small business contacts. And also, you'll hear from the Cascade Sierra Solutions, which is reaching individual truckers. So there will be a number of elements.
My folks in Troy, Oregon, are going to know. My folks in Troy, Oregon, how are they going to know?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Smith, it will be through a variety of efforts, but we will have a very concerted effort to reach out to the small business, so I can't be more specific than that right now.
Representative Smith, we are going to have some suppliers and manufacturers that will be coming up, so I think it might be a good question to ask them as well. Representative Burley, you had,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Last question.
Andy, the figures you used off this chart, $2 million per year, gets X number of engines, et cetera, that's using the general fund and the tax credit. Do you have any idea how successful we might be in the first year leveraging that with federal grants?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Burley, we've included limitation in our budget request for $1.5 million of federal funds for this coming biennium. I'm hopeful that we'll be at least able to compete for that amount and possibly more.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Andy, and I hope you enjoy your birthday in
Thank
the
you.
Committee room. We'll get you a cup of ink later. All right. Thank you. And next we have a panel. We have several panels up. Committee members. The first one we're going to hear from are health, labor, and environmental representatives. We'll also be hearing from panel business and private sector experts, the diesel suppliers and manufacturers, and public sector. And first, we have Representative Reed up. Thank you. How could I miss you up in the front there? Representative Reed would like to come talk to us about, a proposal that he has, and I appreciate your patience. It's not your birthday today, is it?
No, it's not. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'll be quick, and I appreciate you giving me a chance to testify. Tobias Reed, State Representative from District 27, here to support House Bill 2172 and to humbly offer a friendly amendment. Our amendment seeks to focus the bill's effect on one of the biggest threats faced by our children. Kids ride buses to schools. They're often unknowingly exposed to emissions and subject to significant increased risks. People far more expert than I will and have already told you why diesel emissions are important, so I won't bother repeating that. I'm excited about the approach this bill offers because I think it represents the way we should tackle tough problems, a combination of standards, incentives, and collaboration. And I'm also excited about the way it connects public and private sectors. I think it makes special sense to target our efforts to engines and machines that will benefit Oregonians. Makes good sense to establish goals and clearly articulate our intent. My accounting professor in graduate school always said if we remember two things from his class, he'd consider his efforts successful. Incremental analysis, and you get what you measure. We already measure the effects of diesel engine emissions, but with this bill, I think we can begin measuring the effects of reducing that exposure, and I assume that's something we can all support. So it's in that spirit that I want to offer a friendly amendment to the bill. Confident that all of us support the goal of reducing the risks that exist for everyone who's exposed to diesel emissions, but there's one group among us who deserves our special attention. More than 5,000 buses throughout the state transport more than 250,000 Oregon students to and from school every day. EPA estimates that students average an hour and a half each weekday on their bus. And our amendment is very simple. In Section 2, hopefully we're passing that out, on Line 8, after the reference to the year 2017, I'd like to insert the following. In setting the goal, the Commission shall include a target to substantially reduce risk to school children from Oregon school buses by the end of 2013. And if we can adopt this amendment, I think we can send a strong signal that we value the health of our kids and we're acting to protect it. And at the same time, we give the Commission the flexibility to pursue that goal appropriately and take other factors into account as they deem appropriate. The fact is that these schoolyard smokers, in one way to refer to the buses, can and should be improved. All over Oregon, the scene can be the same. Kids board their buses in the morning for a ride to school. Much of the school year, of course, it's raining, so the windows are closed. That only limits the ventilation and makes them even more susceptible. At the end of the day, the process is repeated. Just two quick statistics to remind you of how important this is, that we're particularly striking to me. Kids breathe 50% more air per pound of body weight than adults. And there was a Yale study that really struck me that found that air inside school buses, diesel school buses, of course, contained somewhere between 5 to 15 times more toxic soot than the outside air. I think that's a real concern, of course, but it's also presenting us a real opportunity where we can reduce our environmental impact and contribute to improved children's health. I'm a big fan of the approach of this bill. I think the folks who've worked on it, Dave Vantoff, Andy Ginsberg, Marianne Guest, who you'll hear from later, all deserve a lot of credit and thanks. I've talked with them. They're supportive of our amendment here. And I wish I had a dramatic visual image to bring you, some sort of a picture. But since I don't, I'm going to ask you to imagine what that toxic soot looks like coming out of the tailpipe and going into the lungs of young Oregonians, and remind you how important that is and ask you to support our amendment. You'll hear from a lot of other more expert people. This is a really exciting and important concept, and I'll urge your support of it.
Thank you so much, Representative Reed. We appreciate you coming here today. Are there any questions for the representative? We appreciate your hard work on this and look forward to working with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we will call up somebody from the American Lung Association. Is that Sue Fratt? Sue, come on up. And Lindsay Capps from the Oregon Environmental Council. Ralph Groner and Kevin Downing, can you guys both squeeze up there or share a seat? Yeah, we'll put you on deck. You guys can decide who wants to be on deck. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Sue, if you want to start. They debate over who's on deck.
Thank you, Chair Dean Felder, and members of the House Energy and Environment Committee. I'm Sue Fratt. I'm the CEO of the American Lung Association of Oregon, and I'm here to support House Bill 2172. Particulate matter found in diesel exhaust adversely affects the health of all Oregonians, those living with emphysema, chronic bronchitis, pediatric and adult asthma, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes are all at risk. However, the tiny particles that lodge deep in your lungs also adversely affect the health of the otherwise healthy individuals and put them at risk for heart attack, stroke, and cancer. The American Lung Association's 2005 State of the Air report gave three Oregon counties an F for short-term particulate matter. They are Jackson, Klamath, and Lane counties. These Oregon citizens, a combined population of more than 585,000 people, are at risk for chronic exposure to particulate pollution that can shorten or reduce the quality of life. The exhaust from diesel fuel is one of the most prevalent toxic air pollutants in Oregon. These outdoor pollutants become trapped indoors and continue to irritate the lungs and contribute to the above-mentioned diseases. Recent studies have found that indoor air quality is 3 to 5 times worse than outdoor air quality. 90% of Americans' time is spent indoors. Consequently, cleaning up outdoor air is imperative to our good health. Additionally, toxic air can also concentrate inside school buses, leading to an even higher exposure for children's developing lungs. Fortunately, today's cleaner fuels and pollution controls can dramatically cut pollution. Many states have made progress in reducing pollution within similar legislation to House Bill 2172. You can add Oregon's name to the growing list of states that are making significant steps to ensure cleaner air for all of its citizens. As an example, for the past few years, California has funded programs that provide incentives for manufacturers and operators of diesel vehicles and equipment. These incentives have helped clean up pollution from the buses and other heavy-duty diesel engines. These programs have proven to be an enormous cost-effective success in reducing air pollution, protecting public health, and providing children with safe, healthy transportation to school. House Bill 2172 offers a way for Oregon diesel owners the ways and means to retrofit to provide these same life-saving benefits. In Oregon, we have over 60,000 cases of pediatric asthma, 209,000 cases of adults with asthma. There are over 90,000 Oregonians with chronic bronchitis, over 745,000 Oregonians with cardiovascular disease, and over 3,000 with emphysema. People living with disease are at risk for increased severity, and others are at risk for developing a life-altering disease. These Oregonians live in your districts. So please help us support House Bill 2172. And lastly, the American Lung Association of Oregon requests that you consider full funding this program above the $3 million level at the $14 million level. This would be a significant statement on your behalf to put the importance of Oregonians' health. And the one thought I would like to leave you with capsulizes my prior statements. When you can't breathe, nothing else matters. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is, for the record, Lindsay Capps. I'm the Legislative Director for the Oregon Environmental Council. OEC supports strongly House Bill 2172. This legislation will help protect our health and contribute to better health outcomes for Oregonians, especially our children. Diesel exhaust has been linked to lung cancer, upper respiratory illnesses, allergies, asthma attacks, and death from heart and respiratory disorders. Many of the 40 air toxins that are released when diesel is burned are carcinogenic, and a number of studies have linked diesel exhaust to low birth weight, premature births, and increased risk of birth defects. Diesel soot is of particular concern as an asthma trigger, especially for vulnerable populations. Children who breathe more air pound for pound of body weight compared with adults are especially at risk. Exposure to diesel exhaust is widespread in our state, with diesel particulate matter exceeding health benchmarks in 25 of our 36 counties. Even in counties where ambient air concentrations meet the Department of Environmental Quality's health benchmarks for diesel, people live and work near concentrated sources of diesel exhaust, highways, construction sites, etc., and are exposed to unsafe levels. This problem must be addressed across Oregon. Diesel harms our health and our pocketbooks. Examples of costs that are borne by everyone in Oregon are rising health insurance costs, costs to employers, and costs to taxpayers associated with respiratory and cardiovascular hospitalizations, lost work days, and premature deaths triggered by diesel pollution. Our neighbors to the north estimated that the direct and indirect costs of childhood asthma triggered by environmental contaminants alone cost Washington State nearly $50 million each year. We must work to protect Oregonians' health today by providing incentives for diesel engine owners and operators to burn cleaner fuels, purchase new cleaner engines, retrofit older engines with pollution control equipment, and burn less fuel by reducing, idling, and properly maintaining engines. HB 2172 will start us down this road by providing grants, loans, and tax credits to retrofit, rebuild, or replace older diesel engines and to reduce diesel idling. OEC is especially supportive of focusing these dollars on the cleanup of Oregon's school bus fleets, as Representative Reed is seeking to amend the bill to do. School buses are among the dirtiest vehicles on Oregon's roads because many were manufactured before 1992 and produced far more pollution than newer models. School districts in Oregon want to clean up their fleets, and some, such as Beaverton and Eugene, have utilized federal grant dollars to do so. HB 2172 will improve the ability of all Oregon school districts to compete for federal and private grants to clean up buses by allowing school districts to use the state school fund to match these grants. School districts will also be able to use the clean diesel fund to replace and retrofit their buses as well. HB 2172 provides for $3 million in diesel cleanup per biennium. This just begins to scratch the surface, in our opinion, to enable Oregon to reach its goal of reducing the risk of cancer from diesel pollution to 1 in 1 million by 2017. The Oregon legislature would need to appropriate $14 million per biennium for diesel cleanup, and we would support, as my colleague here has said, increasing those funds so that they are fully funding the program, and in general, hope for the committee's support of this bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Dingfelder, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing AFSCME, or American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, and particularly my locals that deal with environment. DEQ is one of our largest and finest locals, we believe, in the state, especially since I get to introduce our president, who helped write this bill in just a second. I handed out a handout, a clean diesel initiative chart that the chair asked you all have. I also have handed out the kinds of diseases are caused by which pollutions related to diesel on a three-pager. And I've also handed out, if you didn't receive it, the Oregon Air Clean Air Initiative, which if you were to add biofuels to that, which isn't on it because it was Department of Energy, now you see what the Clean Oregon Clean Air Initiative, and by that I'm talking about the front page and the back of that front page, you will have a summary of about the 14 or 15 components. And what I'd like to say is, if I sound excited, it's because I've been with Andy door-to-door in legislators, and we've done, what, about 30 legislators, and if we haven't hit you yet, we were coming to talk to you. My job really has been to try to coordinate everybody, organizations, my local, make sure that people are being educated. I'm excited more than I have ever been about the Oregon Clean Air Initiative, and this is the foundation of the Clean Air Initiative. Like a house, this is the foundation. This is the cement. This is what brings the total package all together. If I were to compare, which I don't want to, since we solidly support biofuels, this, in fact, does a lot more to clean up the very thing that my labor union has and all unions have in America as our number one crisis at the bargaining table, and that's the cost of health care. Kevin Downing, my president, who I'll put this package together, will be talking to you, but I can tell you clearly and concisely that health care cost, in terms of being passed on to my members in the loss of the amount of money they take home for health care costs, as well as health care crises that they face from air pollution, primarily from diesel and primarily from the off-road category, not necessarily just the trucks or buses. So I'm excited because I did work on environmental issues as a youngster in this legislature. This is more exciting to me than all of those bills combined. And I'm not sure, I think you would have seen a different proposition from the governor had he realized that all of his bills really collectively were the Oregon Clean Air Initiative. We're trying to get people to think in terms of a total package, and I believe 20 years from now, if we can find the will and the dollars necessary, we will be talking about a state that cleaned up the air and helped reduce by hundreds of millions our health care costs. Let me give you an example. Dr. Bates, who works on health care, as does Mitch Greenlee, they are determining and working on health care for our citizens. But this is the environmental health care part of that package in front of you. You're going to be hearing, as Senate has already heard, some of the bills. There's a variety of bills and budgets involved in the Clean Air Initiative. If we were to enact the total package, you would see significant reductions in health care costs, particularly asthma, as Dr. Bates testified, is singularly on the rise, and very much so in Oregon. The excitement of this measure is because business, the truckers, Associated General Contractors, labor, our union, Oregon School Employees, government, DEQ, others, environmentalists, the Health Association, all have come together to work, and I forgot, agriculture, have all come together collectively to support House Bill 2172 as the most exciting piece of legislation, environmentally, in my opinion at least, in this legislature. This little chart the chair wanted you to have would show what's indicated by $14 million a biennium. I went to the co-chairs of Ways and Means, and they said to me, Ralph, find us some money. I can tell you I've been one lobbyist who's not going to comment on that, but I've hit about 80 legislators on finding you some money for other, so that you'll have more general fund to use to fund my state police. I can guarantee you one person has worked day and night on that. So I can't be told, Ralph, go find us some more money, when in fact I've really kind of been on overtime on it. This measure will show you that if you were to provide $14 million, this is what Chair Dingfelder was talking about. If you went to the $14 million by the year 2017, we would have reduced our pollution in the air, I believe, by 95%. But Kevin Downing is here, and I'm nice to introduce my president of my DEQ local, who worked since 2001 on this measure, worked cooperatively with industry, all industry, health organizations, and environmental industry. I think he deserves special recognition for all the hours he spent on diesel. If you start asking him questions, he'll lose you because he knows answers to this stuff that go off into other countries. I'd like to introduce Kevin right now. Kevin Downing, the president of our local.
I don't know if I should tell you that he used up all your time. So if you can maybe summarize for us, since we have a whole group of folks behind you, but I certainly want to make sure if there's any questions.
I appreciate this. Thank you very much, Chair Dinkfelder. Members of the committee, my name is Kevin Downing. I live at 6202 Southeast 21st in Portland, and here today representing you as the president of Ask Me Local 3336, the stewards of Oregon, stewards of the environment. And I'm proud to represent them, and they're certainly proud to serve the citizens of Oregon and the protection of the environment. My day job is as the Clean Diesel Coordinator, which is to operate the program that we call the Clean Diesel Initiative. As Ralph had mentioned, this is an effort that we're operating to reduce the environmental and public health impacts from exposure to diesel exhaust, which is really pretty simple. There's a lot of different things going on here, but it's three simple items, which is really to burn a cleaner fuel, like ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel, which is becoming more available, and or biodiesel, to burn fuel cleaner, which is pretty much the installation of exhaust control technology on existing diesel engines, as well as to burn less fuel, that is to get the same job done but to be more efficient, for instance, in terms of reducing idling or even making the vehicles much more efficient than they even are right now. As Ralph had said, we've been doing this since about 2001. I've been successful in getting a number of projects planned and underway, and I won't go into a lot of detail now about that, but with all the efforts that have been so far, we can point to about $19 million to Oregonians in annual benefits from avoided public health costs, environmental impacts, or even financial savings. I tell you, at the end of the month, I feel pretty good cashing my paycheck, given the kind of value that we've been able to return to Oregonians in this kind of a program. We do this on behalf of all the citizens of the state, but in particular, I keep in mind, as I do this work, people that have called me during the course of my work, and I think of the woman who worked for the Dallas Fire Department who had to quit her job, the Dallas, Oregon Fire Department, who had to quit her job as a receptionist because of heightened sensitivity to diesel exhaust that came from exposure to the exhaust from the fire trucks, where she can predict where a diesel engine will be in front of her by several blocks away because she can feel her throat constrict. I'm also thinking of the Gresham gentleman who lives near a gravel pit and who is not a smoker himself but has worked around diesel engines most of his life and is now battling throat cancer that he attributes to the exposure to diesel exhaust. These are just a few of the stories that are around the state, and actually this is one of the most cost-effective environmental and public health strategies that are available to us right now, and I urge you to join with my local in supporting House Bill 2172.
Great, thank you.
And I cede the rest of my time to the rest of the panels.
Thank you, Kevin. I do have a quick question for you, then want to see if there's any questions from any other members. Are there any other states that currently have similar programs, and if so, what levels of funding that they receive? And I also want to make sure folks know that we are the policy committee, the revenue committee, is the ones who will decide the funding levels because they're the ones who have to we all have to pay the bill, but they are the ones who will figure out the revenue impacts that can go along with this bill. So I just want to emphasize for folks that we appreciate your suggestions. However, we are not the ones who fill in the blank on that number, but certainly it helps. So I'm curious about if there are other states that are doing this to augment the federal funds.
Chair Dinkfelder, yes. There's actually the largest one is actually California's program, where I think they spend about $160 million a year. Texas has a similar large-scale program, about approximately $145 million. Exhaust. These are just a few of the stories that are around the state, and actually this is one of the most cost-effective environmental and public health strategies that are available to us right now,
and I'd urge you to join with my local in supporting House Bill 2172.
Great, thank you.
And I cede the rest of my time to the rest of the panels.
Thank you, Kevin. I do have a quick question for you, then want to see if there's any questions from any other members. Are there any other states that currently have similar programs? And if so, what levels of funding that they receive? And I also want to make sure folks know that we are the policy committee, the revenue committee, is the ones who will decide the funding levels, because they're the ones who have to, well, we all have to pay the bill, but they are the ones who will figure out the revenue impacts that can go along with this bill. So I just want to emphasize for folks that we appreciate your suggestions. However, we are not the ones who fill in the blank on that number, but certainly it helps. So I'm curious about if there are other states that are doing this to augment the federal funds.
Chair Dingfelder, yes. There's actually the largest one is actually California's program, where I think they spend about $160 million a year. Texas has a similar large-scale program, about approximately million dollars a year. Washington State has been spending $7 million a year the past several years. Other states like Massachusetts, New Jersey have appropriated other similar scale amounts, and there are other efforts at much smaller scales in a number of other states around the country.
Okay. So obviously we're not the first, or would be about middle. There's probably, it sounds like, a couple of dozen other states that are doing it. Maybe you can just get us a list so we can see by comparison. I think that
I'd be happy to provide that.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder. More of a statement to the committee. It seems to me as if a couple million, $3 million scratches the surface, and if this seems important to do, it seems like we as a committee ought to amend the bill and send to Ways and Means a $14 million price tag. Now, let me tell you why I say that. I served down in budget for three terms, until this term being my fourth term. And if you want to send a strong message to the leadership of this body that this is serious, let this policy committee step up and stand up and say that clean air is important, and send a message down to them and let them amend the number back out.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that suggestion, Representative Smith. This actually has a referral to revenue, not to Ways and Means. So
it'll go to Ways and Means as well, so we could send it to revenue with the number and then to Ways and Means.
It actually currently just has a referral to revenue. So because my understanding is there is a budget number in the governor's budget. So at that point, they would have to make a decision about if there was additional money added, then that would have to go to Ways and Means. So we can have a discussion about that.
The thought is the same, though.
Yeah. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. And Kevin, I'm sure you'll stick around if there's some technical questions that we have. Okay. Next panel is we're going to hear from the private sector, and I think this is the type of panel that maybe Representative Smith actually this or the next panel to ask your question about notification. We have Bob Russell from the Oregon Trucking Association. Kristen Mitchell, is Kristen here? Or Holly, you're going to come up instead from the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, and Greg Miller with Association of General Contractors. Thank you for coming today to testify on this bill. Bob, why don't you start? You drew the short straw. You can start first.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Association. I'd like to tell you a little story. About 2 years ago, I was at a meeting down in San Diego with officials from Washington, Oregon, and California. And I was having a conversation with the Washington Secretary of Transportation, Doug McDonald. And he started talking about diesel death zones. And I sort of got spun up a little bit. But what he was talking about was the Alameda Corridor between the Port of Long Beach and the inland distribution channel for ocean shipping containers, where there is a constant stream of trucks from the port into the distribution center. But I'll get back to the Alameda Corridor in a minute. What I objected strongly to what he was saying, and said, don't you know that the trucking industry has been involved in a process of cleaning up our diesel engines? It started in 2004, and that was the first version of engines. That one dropped NOx significantly. And then in 2006, we went to ultra-low sulfur diesel, went from 500 parts per million to 15, which reduces particulates. This year, we went to particulate traps on our engines, which, again, dramatically reduces particulate emissions. And in 2010, we had another model of truck engine that will again reduce NOx. I like to tell folks that by the time we're done in 2010, we're going to route the exhaust of the truck into the cab because it's going to be cleaner than the air outside. So, you know, as Andy said to you, the new diesel engines are very, very clean. In this conversation that I was having with Doug, he looked me straight in the eye and he says, you know, that's not enough. And I thought, what is he talking about? So I came back to Oregon and I called Kevin Downing, who is Oregon's diesel expert. Matter of fact, Kevin is Oregon's diesel program, one guy. And I said, Kevin, I had this conversation with Secretary McDonald. What is he talking about? He says, well, there's a couple of things he's talking about. One, he said, nothing in the current program reduces carbon dioxide emissions. So I said, how do you do that? Well, you just basically don't burn fossil fuels, because the combustion process of burning fossil fuels creates CO2. So the state is addressing that issue. We did the Renewable Fuels Bill 2210, which replaces renewable fuels for fossil fuels. That reduces CO2. We also have the existing BETC tax credits, which also is designed to reduce fuel consumption and thereby reduce CO2 emissions. And you're going to hear more about the BETC tax credit program in a minute. So that piece, we're already addressing. He said the other thing that needs to be addressed are what he called the legacy fleet. Those older truck engines that last forever, that just keep on going, and they don't have the new technologies to reduce the emissions. So 2172 is the effort to deal with that piece of the diesel fleet. There's a number of reasons that we like 2172 a lot. It's a cost-effective approach. You may have noticed in the bill that DEQ, by administrative rule, will develop a cost-benefit analysis, and that will determine how they're going to issue the grant, loan, and tax credit monies. In addition, if an applicant provides matching funds, it will be more favorably viewed, so we're trying to leverage every buck that we can possibly do. HB 2172 is also very flexible because it has the mix of grants, loans, and tax credits. It can be used singly or in combination. And in addition, it provides sufficient flexibility to DEQ that as new technologies come into the market, they can use those technologies as well, so they're not limited to existing technologies. We think 2172 is also very innovative. To my knowledge, there has been no state that's proposed to retire the oldest diesels from the fleet. There are some trucks that are not susceptible, or you can't, in a cost-effective way, retrofit them. Those that were built prior to 1991, the only thing that you can really do is take them out and shoot them. And that's part of this program, is to actually retire those particular vehicles from the fleet and recycle them. This is also a sound business model. One of the things that we learned from Sharon Banks, and you're going to hear from her in just a few minutes, is that it really is very helpful if we have an intermediary between us and government, someone to deal with the complexities of government and to help us get done what we need to have done. This whole program is based that way, but what it also does is it leverages existing private sector resources. For example, we have the engine manufacturers who are all part of the development of this particular bill, and their marketing folks will go out and actually solicit folks to participate in this program. And then they will do the analysis, submit it to DEQ. DEQ will approve the analysis, approve the whatever they're going to do to the trucks. Once that's approved, they just bring the trucks in, they retrofit them, then they bill DEQ, and everything's taken care of, and we don't have to deal with government. We don't do government very well, and you'll hear that from Sharon in a minute. This bill also is very beneficial to Oregonians. You heard earlier about the limitation for the first 3 years, that 75% of the money has to be used for vehicles that are used 75% in the state. But the cost-benefit analysis itself will focus on vehicles that are here. Sort of to sum up, we think the real purpose of 2172 is to prevent an Alameda corridor happening in Oregon. This is the fix to that kind of situation. We strongly support the bill, and we urge you to do the same, and would solicit your help in raising the amount of funding that's currently available for 2172.
Great, thank you. I appreciate that. We're going to keep going because we have two more panels, so I'm going to have to start asking people to limit their comments to 3 minutes so everyone gets to have their say, and then we'll ask questions at the end. Thanks. Go ahead.
Okay. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Holly Sears, and I'm the Governmental Affairs Director for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, also known as ORA. I'm here today to testify in favor of House Bill 2172, the Clean Diesel Bill. As you know, ORA is a statewide trade association representing private solid waste management companies in Oregon. ORA members collect and process most of Oregon's residential and commercial recyclables and garbage, as well as operate material recovery facilities and many of Oregon's solid waste transfer stations and landfills. What you may not think about, at least at first, is how many trucks ORA members have on the road to do their job. Our work requires trucks, often more than one, on neighborhood city streets, busy commercial districts, rural county roads, state highways and freeways, 6 days a week, all year long. In order to collect garbage and recycling, the trucks operate at slow speeds and spend time idling while lifting containers and packing loads. Almost all the time spent and miles traveled in these trucks occur within the state of Oregon. ORA members are already working hard to decrease diesel emissions. Many of our members are using biofuel and many biodiesel, and many others are looking to add biodiesel into their fuel mix. One ORA member, Rogue Disposal and Recycling in Medford, has taken the next step by retrofitting some of its diesel engines already. As you may know, the Medford-Ashland area is an air quality maintenance area for both carbon monoxide and particulate matter emissions, meaning that while the area has very high levels of these pollutants in the past, ongoing efforts have reduced levels to those that meet the standards of the Federal Clean Air Act. The major sources of these pollutants are not diesel trucks, although these vehicles do contribute to the mix. However, concerns based on medical research have raised additional awareness about health risks from diesel engine particulates, even in areas that otherwise meet the federal air quality standards. While over-the-road trucks could be considered a prime target for action because they travel upwards of 100,000 miles a year, a more geographically constrained vehicle, even traveling at much fewer miles per year, can be a better candidate for air quality improvements in the given area. Rogue Disposal and Recycling volunteered to be a candidate for installation of exhaust control technology on some of the vehicles in its fleet. The DEQ conducted a fleet assessment looking at the emission standard vintage of each vehicle and their level of use, and were able to determine 9 vehicles that would deliver the greatest emission reduction for the investment of time, cost, effort, and money. Because of the Medford area's past air quality issues, it has become eligible for a program called Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Program, or CMAQ, which are highway transportation dollars allocated to projects that are intended to offset and reduce air quality impacts that come from transportation sources. Through the Rogue Valley Council of Governments, Rogue Disposal and Recycling's diesel retrofit project was approved. So CMAQ, in this case, required a 20% matching contribution from Rogue Disposal, and Rogue Disposal agreed to meet that obligation. This was the first CMAQ project approved in the Northwest involving diesel retrofitting, and it was also unique in that most CMAQ projects are awarded to local governments and not private entities. This project was a groundbreaker for both of those, because of both of those issues. 9 trucks were fitted with technology known generically as partial flow filters, and the technology offers at least a 50% reduction in particulate emissions, is not dependent on the availability of ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel, had high chances of success installed on vehicles like a garbage truck that operates at low speeds and is idle for a significant portion of its duty cycle, and doesn't require ongoing maintenance. That the devices were installed, and Road Disposal reports no increased maintenance or loss of power. In fact, the company is very pleased with the beneficial impact of their operations from lowered emissions. Funding for these kinds of projects is a limitation. The state of Oregon offers a 35% tax credit. For several years, EPA has offered a grant program, but competition for these funds is very high. CMAQ funds are available but are limited to areas in the state like the Portland Metro, LaGrande, Oak Ridge, and Medford. The Clean Diesel Bill is an opportunity to increase diesel engine retrofitting and replacement throughout the state of Oregon. Its preference for trucks that operate mostly in the state guarantees the biggest bang for Oregon's airshed buck. The bill promotes the protection of the health and welfare of all Oregonians, and it is an environmental goal that will result in measurable benefits to all. ORA supports House Bill 2172 and, in fact, would support funding the bill at the level that would allow it to meet the emissions goals set forth in the bill. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Holly. Go ahead, Greg.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee. My name is Greg Miller. I'm here today representing the Associated General Contractors. It's my members that build the state's schools, roads, bridges, sewer infrastructure, all sorts of programs like that, and especially in high-density urban areas where this is especially a problem. It's because of the economics, the durability, the longevity, and the power that a diesel engine requires or that puts out. It's because of those factors that make diesel engines a very important and almost an irreplaceable tool in the construction industry. They're very efficient, and again, they produce enormous amounts of power to lift bridge beams, bridge girders, all sorts of heavy pieces of buildings and roads and stuff that need to be put in place. Here today to support the bill, I want to talk a little bit about AGC of America. Kind of the parent association for the chapter that I represent today, has been involved with EPA on a federal level for about 7 years looking at these issues and working to come up with money on the federal level to work on voluntary retrofitting efforts. Associated General Contractors was awarded a grant from the EPA's National Clean Diesel Campaign in the amount of $120,000 in the fall of 2005, targeted at this state on the state's bridge program to work on voluntary retrofits of construction equipment. The amount is small, $120,000, but what we hope to prove is large in the fact that there hasn't been an enormous amount of retrofitting done on construction equipment. So in the industry, there's still a little bit of skepticism on the impacts that retrofit equipment, specifically on the exhaust portion of the engine, what kind of impacts will be had on power efficiency, and then the other factors that may hamper the performance of the engine. This bill specifically, one of the components of the agency is very supportive of is the actual creation of the fund. It's a costly endeavor, especially for Oregon's smaller businesses who represent in the highway sector that have very thin profit margins that can't afford to spend upwards of $20,000 or $30,000 to retrofit their fleets. The cost of the most simple retrofit on one piece of equipment can be $2,000 to upwards of $18,000, depending upon the type of technology that you use. So the program is great for my members, also for their employers or their employees. On these construction job sites, they're basically the first people that are breathing the dirty air. So as particulate matter falls out of the air from a cat, say a caterpillar, there's a gentleman sitting on a cat, sometimes with no shelter around him, no cab to protect him from the environment that he's producing with the engine. So very good for employees and employers alike. And then again, creating the fund is good for all of Oregon. It's good for employers able to retrofit their fleets. It's good for the people of the state of Oregon in reducing the health issues surround diesel engines. again, creating the fund falls in line with the governor's priorities and federal priorities. And the other component of the bill that we're especially supportive of is a section that allows the DEQ more flexibility in gaining federal funds. Currently, there's a lengthy process that state agencies have to go for to apply for federal funds. Sometimes grant announcements from the federal government come with short time periods, and DEQ is not able to get in front of this body to get explicit permission to do that. So allowing them more flexibility and getting federal funds for these kinds of programs are very beneficial in our point of view. So thank you for your time today. And had the chance to work with Kevin Downing. He's a partner in my grant. After hearing Mr. Groening testify, I'm very honored to work with Kevin. He's been very helpful and very wonderful for AGC. I believe that this is the first type of relationship that we've had with DEQ from a private sector and public agency. So happy about that relationship and working with DEQ.
Thank you all for your testimony. Are there any questions for any members of this panel? All right. Seeing none, excuse you and call up Sharon Banks. Is there a representative of Freightliner here today? No. Then Andrew Johnson should also come up to the testimony stand. Please remember to tell us your name for the record. Oh, it looks like Frank Harris from Farco. Is he here?
We're here.
Okay, come on up. And why don't one of you two can go ahead and your name for the record.
I'm Sharon Banks. I'm the CEO of Cascade CRS Solutions, or CSS for short. CSS is a multi-state nonprofit that upgrades trucks with fuel savings and emission-reducing equipment. Our focus is on the I-5 corridor between Canada and Mexico. So far, we've upgraded about 400 trucks. A full upgrade can save about 5,000 gallons of fuel per year, along with 50 tons of carbon dioxide and associated diesel particulate matter, NOx, and other toxic air emissions. CSS has over 40 fuel-saving technologies in our truck stop showroom in Cobourg, Oregon. The fuel-saving technologies have a return on investment to the company, but the diesel particulate trap does not. It does, however, have a large benefit for the community. It provides cleaner, healthier air for all. The cost of adding this equipment to trucks is about $10,000 for diesel engines that are up to 400 horsepower. If a truck is over 400 horsepower, then we're looking at twice that. Cascade CRS Solutions is working with government agencies in three states to coordinate incentives to help pay for diesel particulate filters on all the trucks that operate on the I-5 corridor. This bill would help reduce the burden on businesses that qualify to make their trucks cleaner and to keep in compliance with pending California legislation. California is proposing to mandate diesel particulate filters on all trucks that do business in California within the next 2 years. This is going to greatly impact Oregon businesses. Most of our Oregon mom-and-pop operators cannot afford to do this upgrade without assistance. In some cases, the cost of the upgrade is worth more than the value of the truck. Many of the older, more polluting trucks may choose to operate in Oregon and Washington only, or just go out of business altogether. Our Oregon businesses really need this tax credit, and I'm hopeful that the bill can be adjusted to prorate the benefit for Oregon-based businesses that operate less than 50% of the time in the state. The time spent in Oregon, the 50% rule, is not necessarily a good measure of emissions reduced. A large truck is twice the horsepower. Pulling a much larger load puts out much more emissions than smaller trucks and buses that operate. Also, over the road trucks tend to operate 14-hour days, and they idle all night long. So there is a huge, even a truck operating 30% to 50% of the time in the state of Oregon still puts out a huge amount of particulate matter within our state. California has recognized that they have a rule in California that 75% of the time they need to be in the state of California to qualify for their Carl Moyer grant fund. California Resources Board is realizing that they completely ignored one of the biggest sources of emissions in the state, and they are relaxing that rule for Cascade Sierra Solutions and are cooperating with us to let us prorate the amount of California grant dollars to help out the over-the-road truck industry. So I would hope that Oregon would do the same.
Okay. Are you done?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, representatives, chairman, chair lady, Dingfelder, and the rest of the committee, I'm proud to be here. My name is Andrew Johnson. I'm vice president of sales for Cummins Diesel in Portland. And I live in Portland, but I sleep in Oregon City because most of the time I'm at work. So. But I've been doing this for 32 years. I've been in the diesel engine business, so I'm kind of the diesel expert. But I'm also here to represent diesel engine retrofit in general and then the other devices that Sharon is pushing, the APUs and that. We also offer those. But we're here in favor of House Bill 2172, and we're the diesel guys, and everybody thinks of diesel being the dirty engine. I've heard that a little bit today, but I'm here to tell you that for here on, we're considered a clean diesel. As Bob Russell said, we're going to kind of sell them as clean, air cleaning machines, because as the air intake coming in, the intake is the exhaust is going to come out cleaner in a lot of areas than it went in. And mainly because of this device right here, which is a diesel particulate filter, which doesn't let any of the particulate matter, very little of it, pass through. And so it traps it all and then burns it and only puts out non-regulated gases that are not harmful to our society. And again, like I tell everybody, as we bring in people all the time from outside to talk about this, is that, you know, we sell the diesel engines, we operate them, but we also breathe the air that everybody else does. So, you know, we're concerned about the air our children, our grandchildren, everything else do. So that's why I highly recommend this, especially the retrofit we've been doing. We cover the 5-state area of Montana, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska, and those areas that have done retrofit. Well, we've had a voluntary retrofit program here in Oregon, and we do give some tax credits for putting retrofit devices on and buying new trucks and that. We really have ignored the legacy fleet. And the legacy fleet, a good thing about diesel engines, they're very powerful. They last a long time. The bad thing about diesel engines, they last a long time when you're trying to clean up the air, because we got engines out there that are 40, 50 years old that are still operating every day and putting out. Those are the dirtiest ones we have out there. So those are the ones that really need to be addressed, because they're the ones that are helping pollute the environment. The ones we're putting out today and forward, again, are going to be very clean diesel, and we like to use that term a lot. So our testimony today is in favor of that, and the fact that we need to do something to clean up the legacy fleet. And of those states we operate in, those that are getting cleaned up are the ones that have provided a fund for either matching federal dollars so you can get that money, or working with Sharon and her organization to do the loans, where we loan people the money and then on a low interest. And basically the money is really used a lot wider than just giving it away. You know, we're really looking at people to invest in this. But when you put one of these devices on, it does nothing for you financially as an operator. It actually contributes to more maintenance and contributes to an expensive device being put on. And like one of the other gentlemen said, we're looking at anywhere from a cheap end, $2,500, to the top end, depending on the engine, a couple $100,000 for big stationary engines, and that to retrofit them with devices to clean up the air. So we have to come up with some money to help these people do it and make the right decision, because if you just leave it up to themselves, they've got payrolls and they've got to make all the rest of their payments and everything. The last thing they want to do is spend more money on things that are going to cost them more money to operate. So That's the gist of my presentation, but I do want to say that we in the diesel retrofit business and the diesel engine business really think this is a good idea to have a bill to fund these devices.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you coming here and bringing
Thank
your
you.
Technology. Any questions for this panel? Representative Cannon.
I do have a question. Thank you both for being here. And Sharon, your testimony was the first I'd heard of the possible fuel efficiency gains that trucks can make by undergoing certain kind of retrofitting. I understand that you're from your packet here that your company does much more than just diesel engine retrofitting. What accounts for those efficiency upgradings? If we put a clean diesel engine retrofit on alone, does that produce fuel efficiency savings?
No, the diesel retrofit, if it's a passive system, there's a negligible fuel economy impact, but an active system, which a lot of the 07 engines have, actually has a fuel penalty. It will produce additional greenhouse gases.
Okay. I was, Madam Chair, if I can just
follow up
and perhaps, you know, anyone else can address this. I was just concerned, well, I wouldn't say concerned, I was, I guess, excited to hear possibly that there would be fuel efficiency would result from these kinds of changes, but it sounds like if retrofitting, I understand that you're from your packet here that your company does much more than just diesel engine retrofitting. What accounts for those efficiency upgradings? If we put a clean diesel engine retrofit on alone, does that produce fuel efficiency savings?
No. The diesel retrofit, if it's a passive system, there's a negligible fuel economy impact, but an active system, which a lot of the 07 engines have, actually has a fuel penalty. It will produce additional greenhouse gases.
Okay. I was, Madam Chair, if I can just
follow up
and perhaps, you know, anyone else can address this. I was just concerned, well, I wouldn't say concerned, I was, I guess, excited to hear possibly that there would be fuel efficiency would result from these kinds of changes, but it sounds like if I'm understanding Sharon correctly, that that's not, in fact, the case. We cannot expect operators to get fuel efficiency gains from the kinds of programs that we're trying to establish with the diesel program.
We're trying to put the diesel retrofit as a package deal with the fuel economy package to have a complete upgrade of a truck that can have a return on investment.
Okay.
But that's the part of the package that nobody wants to buy.
Right.
And so, you know, it's important that we have some incentives to help pay for that.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you for the clarification. Any other questions? Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just reading this packet from Cummins. Something caught my eye, aside from the particulate filter. This selective catalytic reduction European heavy-duty solution, is this something that's been applied here in this country yet?
For off-highway and industrial, yes, it has. Beyond highway, the jury's still out whether EPA's going to do it because it takes urea, and urea is one of the ingredients of methamphetamine, you know, so we always wonder if that's a good idea to put that in the hands of, you know, people that might use it for something else. But we really think that that is one of the technologies moving forward we're looking at. We're also looking, but that really applies to NOx reduction, not to particulate matter. We're in a particulate matter area here, not meaning particulate matter. NOx reduction, SCR is one of the devices used for that. A NOx absorber, which looks very similar to this, only uses a little different technology of burning the NOx, is one way to do it. And we're kind of looking to go to that for 2010 when we have to reduce NOx. But right now, we're kind of weighing between, that's what Daimler Chrysler calls their blue tech technology. That's what part of that is an SCR using urea. It's called a selective catalytic reduction, and it's basically injected into the exhaust. And it's a form of ammonia. It's a liquid-based ammonia that reacts with the exhaust and cleans it. So,
follow up?
Yeah, But you said that it is being applied right now in Oregon. And
stationary engines mainly.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a couple of concerns. One, not only the fact that it's used in the production of methamphetamine, and in fact, I would submit that if it's in off-highway vehicles, that might be even more subject to criminal activity than when it's going up and down I-5.
Yeah.
But the other downside to this, if the mix is not proper, you're going to get ammonia passing through and
ammonia
emitted into the atmosphere.
Ammonia slip is something they look at in the control technology to make sure. Because if you get ammonia slip, it means you're putting too much in,
right.
And therefore you're wasting it, and it costs money, you know. So we, on our control technology, we'd monitor the exhaust coming out to make sure we don't have too much ammonia slip. Just like we can have too much NOx or NO2 slip, which is a poisonous gas on this device if we don't apply it correctly. So we have to watch for where we put it in a confined environment, because we can create a worse environment for the employees than a better one. You know, there's trade-offs on everything you do.
Any other questions?
Sure.
Great. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. And this Harco Manufacturing, is that right? And what's your name, sir?
Jeff Harris.
Okay. I had down your brother, right?
My Frank, father, actually.
Your father, okay. I was like, another Harris was supposed to be here. So I'm going to have to ask you, with one more panel up, if you can really keep your comments very brief, because we're running out of time. But thanks for coming, and if you can state your name for the record.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chairman, or Madam Chair, representatives. My name, again, is Jeff Harris, General Manager of Operations for Harco Manufacturing. We are a local manufacturer here in Oregon, located in Portland. We've been serving the local, national, and international diesel engine industries with our designed and fabricated products since 1948. Briefly, some of the products that we offer, engine exhaust spark arresters, engine exhaust silencers, engine exhaust emission systems, including both DOC, which is diesel oxidation catalyst, as well as DPF, diesel particulate filters, and oftentimes in combination with engine exhaust silencers. We also offer a full line of supporting products and accessories. Some of the main industries that we currently serve are prime and standby power generator sets, marine engine power systems, locomotive power systems, trucking and transportation, new and used construction equipment, mining equipment, logging and mill equipment as well, and Department of Defense, primarily Army, Navy, and Coast Guard. We are here in favor of HB 2172. Some of the reasons from our perspective, clearly it provides incentive for local users to retrofit voluntarily through tax credits and funds. We also feel it reduces or delays potential need for retrofit regulation and inspections that can represent a drain on precious financial and human resources. It could also represent a real partnership between local government and businesses to work together towards cleaner emissions objectives. Would help create local jobs for emissions, device manufacturers, as well as retrofit contractors, clearly, as well as end users. We also feel it could potentially increase Oregon's export opportunities for emission-related products and services, both nationally and internationally. I would like to introduce Joe Harkness. He's our manager of sales application engineering for Hark Manufacturing. He has a few examples of projects that we've accomplished.
Madam Chair, committee members, I just want to point out one of the high-profile projects we're involved in with the CSU project.
Could you state your name for the record, please?
Joseph Harkness.
Thank you. And you're with?
Harco, yes, head of engineering, yes. And on that particular project, that diesel particulate filter has logged over 750,000 miles as of today. This is actually maintenance and cleaned every 30,000 miles, and we've had no reports of any problems as far as any clogging or any back pressure problems with this device. I also want to point out some other projects we've done here locally. OHSU, we've got three DOCs that are hooked up on some 2-megawatt CAT generators. We also have three generators operating over at Portland Providence Hospital. That's DOC applications. We've got a couple of generators down at Salem Hospital that has a couple of diesel oxidation catalysts. Got one over Sunrise Water Treatment Plant that has a diesel particulate filter and SCR combination unit. and we have one at Portland General Electric. It's a substation over there in Tigard. It has a 2-megawatt generator, has a DOC oxidation catalyst in there too as well. We also have a variety of other applications we've done throughout the state of California, which we're highly involved with down there right now with the Clean Air Act down there. And we've also have international jobs down in South America, some other jobs throughout the United States. Great. Thank you for your time.
Great, thank you. Just a quick question on these projects that you outlined here that they're all mainly backup. Well, a few are prime, but the majority are backup power.
That's correct, yes.
And so these are projects that have already been retrofitted. Is that correct?
Yes.
But under this bill, they would have qualified for the tax credit?
Correct.
Okay. All right, thank you. Questions for this panel? No questions? All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay. I have, and I don't have any affiliation. John Pearson had signed up. John, if you want to come up, and then we will pull up the last panel. If you could limit your comments to 3 minutes, appreciate it.
Thank you. I didn't know the. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm Chairman of the Committee, ladies and gentlemen.
Can you state your name for the record?
My name is John Pearson,
thank you.
I didn't list an affiliation because I wasn't sure of the format, but I'm in fact here today to represent the Oregon Chapter of the Physicians for Social Responsibility.
Thank you.
We would just like to indicate our support for this bill. I've been very impressed by the testimony, and I feel that most of what I have to say is completely redundant, so I can be very brief. It's been talked about much today about the health effects of diesel exhaust, so I suppose there's no need to go over that again. It has been recognized as associated with lung cancer by all the major agencies in the United States and internationally. And the risk to children has been mentioned, and it's particularly the thing we like about the bill, or I like about it, is the reference to the school bus retrofit, because a number of studies that do show that children are exposed considerably to the diesel exhaust, up to 4 times in the diesel bus as a child that would be outside the diesel bus. And it's worse at the back of the bus. I mean, extensive studies detailing all this stuff. It's worse at the back of the bus than the front of the bus. It's worse when the highest when windows are closed. And I was interested to hear today the gentleman say that he knows the data in Oregon that children spending 1.5 hours a day in the school bus. There's actually a public health study that uses that figure, 1 to 2 hours a day in the school bus, that if you spend every school day in a year, you measurably increase the risk of lung cancer eventually in those children. And it uses a denominator of 1 million children, so we probably don't have that number of children in Oregon exposed. But they quote 23 to 40 cases of lung cancer as a result of that increased exposure to diesel exhaust, which translated out with the public health experts, the way they calculate these things, is as a 46 times increase in the risk of lung cancer due to exposure to diesel exhaust over what's considered a significant level by the EPA. So a measurable risk that we're exposing our children to every day. So we're particularly impressed by the aspect of the component of the bill which talks about school buses. So given the other things that were mentioned also, the increase in allergies in children in neighborhoods where there's heavy bus and truck traffic, have children up to a 40% increase in wheezing, and adolescents up to a 70% increase in allergies. And then I mentioned again the children are actually in the bus have a greatly increased risk. There's also an effect with the polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons and the particulate matter in diesel exhaust that combines with other amines to affect DNA sequencing, probably affects the base arrangements in the DNA, and has been linked to fetal maldevelopment. It impairs DNA repair, and there's been definite links to newborns with smaller heads and smaller weights and small and decreased height. And there was some reference earlier to endocrinologic effects. The research has shown that, again, because of the lack of differentiation of cells, there's a lack of differentiation of ovaries and testes. Now, admittedly, a lot of these studies were in rats, but it does affect the tissue and the development. And so there's a definite, an unquestioned health risk to exposure to diesel fuel. So again, I would just like to recommend or urge you to pass this bill. And the aspect of it, again, that's impressive is the funds to retrofit the school buses. And I understand the way the bill is written, these funds will not come out of the general school fund. There's funds specifically allocated to retrofitting the vehicles, so we don't have to put the school officials in a bind as to what to do with their money. So, again, in the interest of time, I think a lot's been said today. We just wanted to be known to be in support of this bill and urge you to support it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pearson. We appreciate you coming here today and for your comments. Last, we have a panel from the school district, and then also the Farm Bureau wanted to testify. So I'm just going to ask all of you to come up. You have we have 10 minutes left, minus two, because we get kicked out a few minutes before three. So we have the Salem. Actually, we have the Salem Transit Services Director. Is this for the Salem School District? Marianne Guest with the OSEA. And Katie Fast from the Farm Bureau, and then we had somebody from Central District.
Central School District.
Is that Carrie? Okay,
Bryant, yes.
Carrie. Why don't you go ahead, Carrie, and oh, as long as you guys don't mind mixing and matching, we'll have you all up here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, committee members, I want to thank you. My name is Carrie Bryant. My address is 1998 Southeast Virginia Drive in Dallas, Oregon. I'm employed with Central School District 13J in Independence, Mom School District for going on 6 years now. I'm going to cut what I have to say short. All the technologies has been covered. I just want to say today that we were fortunate to we received a grant, federal grant, of almost $50,000 for the purpose of retrofit and emissions reduction. Much consideration about that. I did a lot of research into the effects of emissions from school buses, and I decided that not only was it my responsibility to keep our buses the safest mode of transportation, I decided that it was my responsibility to do whatever else I could to keep the students and the drivers that are in these buses safe. So anyway, we applied for the grant. Thanks to Kevin Downing, it was much help on this, and we received this grant. But I opted to use four different technologies, and I'm not going to share them with you today because they've already been covered. But I do want to just tell you that our data, that I'm big on data, and we are receiving almost a 10% increase in fuel mileage. And it may conflict with reports, but it's not totally just that, but it's a new way of thinking. This grant has changed the way we think. We do everything different. We take in consideration when I purchase buses, I look at the engines, what engines, and so on and so forth. And I'm just tickled over this grant and what it's done for us. So I guess what I could say is our community is excited. We're a small rural community, 2,700 students, I think, in our district. Somewhere close in there, but I just encourage. It's really been exciting. We are a new district. Our buses, the exhaust smells different, looks different, and I know that when the buses goes out, that we have done our job in protecting the students and the drivers. And I just want to encourage you to consider that on this bill.
Thank you for coming here today. We appreciate it. And having personal experience with the retrofitting is, I think, really valuable input for this bill. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. For the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. We are here today in support of House Bill 2172. Diesel engines are critical for the harvesting and transportation of Oregon's crops to
to market and to processing. You've heard a lot of talk today about Oregon's legacy fleet, and that is the vehicles that the majority of my members use on their day-to-day farm operations. Oregon's farmers are resourceful mechanics that can stretch the life of a diesel engine, which is already known for its durability and life. 2172 sets up a program that uses incentives to meet our air quality goals. Farm Bureau feels that this is a nice complement to the biofuels legislation that this committee's already passed and sets a good policy for our air quality goals in the state, and just here to add my support.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Marianne Guest representing Oregon School Employees Association, and we also support House Bill 2172. Want to commend the committee for taking this up and the governor's office and DEQ for bringing this issue forward. I also share a birthday with Andy and Dave, so I feel like I'm in good company. So. Must be in the air. I'm just going to restrict my testimony to things that haven't been said and talk just about how many school buses are on the road right now. There's over 5,000, but approximately 1,370 buses were manufactured prior to 1994, and those buses can't be retrofitted adequately. So there are quite a few buses that would need to be replaced under this bill.
Marion, can you repeat that number again? Out of the 5,000 school buses, you said how many?
There are approximately 1,370 buses that were manufactured prior to 1994 that cannot be retrofitted adequately, and also will not meet the 2007 federal standards on emissions, nor do they meet the federal safety requirements right now for school buses. The remaining 4,000 buses that were manufactured after 1993 can be retrofitted to reduce particulates at 95% at a cost approximately of $6,000 to $7,000 apiece. So that will come out. Not all of those are diesel, but I'd say the majority are diesel. So that cost would be about $22 million to just provide retrofits for around 4,000 buses. There are 12 school buses manufactured prior to 1977 that are on the road, but right now there is a bill in Representative Byers' committee to take them off the road, which would be very wise, I think, because of the safety factor and the health factor. So the total cost to replace about 1,300 school buses will be approximately $100 million. Gasp. That's not even close to what the bill asked for. But there's a combination of funds out there that help school districts find replacement dollars. But we would ask the committee to prioritize replacement of publicly owned school transportation systems first, which would cover approximately 1,000 school buses on the road today. This is clearly a health and safety issue for Oregon's children. We have 75 buses in Beaverton that need replacement. North Clackamas has 72. Salem-Keizer has 65. Hillsboro has 44. So we've really got a problem out there. We also have heard today that the diesel fumes within the buses is a real problem, and that's an additional $1,000 for a replacement. It's called a closed crankcase ventilation system, which is different than what was showed here today.
Okay, Marion, I'm going to have to ask you a wrap up.
Okay,
because the next committee is going to get started here any minute. So is there anything else?
I would just say that, you know, that the governor's allocation is a good start, but we're going to need additional dollars. And I want to also say that we support Tobias Reed, Representative Reed's amendment, and really applaud his leadership in making sure Oregon's children are safe. So thank you.
Quick question, Jean,
yes.
And maybe Andy knows this. How much money we're receiving from the feds this year for retrofitting school buses?
There's $50 million has been allocated in the president's budget.
But that's for all.
That's
so
for
is, do we know what's coming to Oregon? Well, it doesn't necessarily mean, Andy, I don't know if you can answer that. It doesn't mean it's going to be equally distributed among the states, right? The question was if we know how much federal money will be coming to Oregon for school bus retrofitting, is it a competitive grant program or do they just allocate it equally among the 50 states?
Competitive grant.
It's a competitive grant. Okay. So I'm assuming we've applied for grants and we're...
We will.
We will. So that hasn't opened yet, that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any quick questions for the panel before we get kicked out of the room?
Okay.
Thank you very much. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2172 and close the House Energy and Environment Committee.